This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. More than 1.5 million Americans file for bankruptcy every year. For most, it's a last resort that bears a sense of failure, even shame. Some, though, abuse the system to walk away from their debts. For almost a decade now, banks, credit card companies, and retailers have pushed Congress to overhaul the bankruptcy laws to make it more difficult to avoid repayment. This year, Republican sponsors of the legislation predict it will pass. Unions, civil rights organizations, and consumer groups oppose the changes, which they say are unfair to the poor, to minorities, and to the elderly. A bill backed by the Bush administration reached the Senate floor this week. In a few minutes, we'll talk with senators from both sides of the aisle. Later in the program, Senator Arlen Specter joins us. The first of President Bush's controversial judicial nominations reached the Senate Judiciary Committee today, and Chairman Specter will take your calls about qualifications, filibusters, and the deepening partisan divide in the U.S. Senate. But first, bankruptcy. If you've ever filed for bankruptcy, what brought you to that point? Was it procedurally difficult or easy? In the aftermath, did it change the way you made decisions about how you spend your money? What lessons have you learned? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address, TOTN@NPR.org. Joining us now from the studios of Audio Post in Philadelphia is Jeff Gallis. He's business reporter and columnist for the Philadelphia Inquirer. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thanks, Neil. Good to be here.
If the bill that's on the Senate floor passes in the form it's written, how does it propose to change the bankruptcy law?
Well, it will make bankruptcy harder and more expensive for individuals to file. The supporters of it say that it's aimed at the deadbeats out there and that they'll be steered into a form of bankruptcy called Chapter 13, where you have to agree to pay off as much of your debt as you can over the next several years instead of Chapter 7, where your debts are mostly wiped out in return for giving up your secured assets like your house.
Mm-hmm. Now, how do they judge which chapter of this book you end up in?
Right now, debtors who can afford to pay off their debt are supposed to be in Chapter 13, or supposed to pay off what they can through that form of bankruptcy. There are some abusers, and the system has some checks and balances in it to catch them. It may not do a good enough job, but critics of the bill say this is like swatting a mosquito with an anvil, and that while they're going after the small proportion of shameless deadbeats out there, they're going to get a lot of people who really need the fresh start of bankruptcy because they've fallen on hard times and don't really have any other way out.
Mm-hmm. Now, there is a means test that's included as part of this measure. How would that work?
In theory, it's supposed to only affect people who earn above the median income in their state. But the critics, again, say that in practice, it'll make everybody subject to the investigation that would be required for it and will add thousands of dollars to the costs of some bankruptcy.
Of just the proceedings alone?
Just the proceedings alone.
And basically, this is somebody who does an investigation of your property, your investments, your bank accounts, all that sort of stuff.
This law would make the lawyer who files the bankruptcy basically liable for errors in your schedules, your listing of assets and liabilities.
Hmm. Now, new personal bankruptcy filings actually dropped over the past year. A Harvard University study shows that half of the recent filings, though, are from people who are not able to pay their medical bills, even though many of them had health insurance. This is a troubling trend.
It is. There are a number of studies over the years that have linked a large proportion of bankruptcies to health issues, divorce, and job loss are the three main ones. And the problem is now you can't even look at a bankruptcy schedule and figure out what the medical debt is because so much of it has been turned into credit card debt. You pay with a credit card to the pharmacy, the doctor takes it, the hospitals take it, and, you know, you have a few thousand dollars in medical debt on a credit card and you get behind and your interest rates can balloon to 25 or 30%. $5,000 can turn into $15,000 of debt.
And the credit card industry is one of the major sponsors of this legislation.
The credit card industry believes, and they're right to some extent, that there are people who abuse the system. There are cases of people who've run up debt in the months preceding a bankruptcy on their credit cards. And I think everybody agrees that that's an abuse. The question is whether this is the right fix or just too big and broad and harsh a fix for a problem that is a little more narrow than that. The critics of the bill in particular say that lending practices that extend credit to people at low rates and then double, triple, or quadruple them puts everybody at risk. Because if you borrow a few $1,000s at 8% and all of a sudden are paying 30%, you need a lot more money just to stay even, let alone pay it off.
We're talking about proposed changes to the bankruptcy laws. Our guest is Jeff Gelis, business reporter and columnist for the Philadelphia Inquirer. If you'd like to join the conversation, it's 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, TOTN at NPR.org. And let's begin with Rick in Sacramento, California.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to comment because I believe it was 1994, I filed bankruptcy because I had four credit cards outstanding. I was having trouble paying from school debts. And 6 months after I paid the credit card, after I filed the bankruptcy, which I did myself, in fact, with just the help of a paralegal, and it cost me only a few hundred dollars. 6 months after the bankruptcy was settled in court and they relieved me from my credit card debt, I purchased a brand new pickup truck at 3.5% financing, which I just recently paid off. So I can't say that filing the bankruptcy was either costly or damaging to my credit. And in fact, now I receive credit card offers from the very companies that I filed bankruptcy against. So,
well, Rick, you know, there's plenty of documented cases where people's cats get offered credit cards in the mail, but we may not put you in that same category. Rick's story is certainly not unusual, Jeff.
We're on target this year, for, I guess, 2004, to have more than 5 billion credit card solicitations out there again. And a substantial chunk of them are going to people with questionable credit. Those are profitable business for the credit card companies and for other lenders. And they price risk into the model. So someone thought that he was worth a 3.5% loan. They could always take his truck back at the end of that. But even credit cards are offered to people who file bankruptcy now.
Rick, thanks very much.
Well, okay, thanks for taking my call.
And good luck.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. The credit card companies, they're marketing very aggressively, aren't they?
Absolutely. They are eager to get people to sign up for cards and to use them. About 4 in 10 people pay off their accounts each month, and the rest of them do what's called revolving, and they pay interest.
Mm-hmm.
And you get a really good rate at the start, and if you stay current, but... they have built so many triggers into the system now for raising your rates that a lot of people think that they're designed as traps. It's not just if you're late to paying Citibank that Citibank raises your rate. Citibank will write into its credit card contracts so they can look at your performance with other creditors. A lot of credit card companies now have a general provision in their contract that says we can raise your rate at any time for any reason. And sometimes they do.
And I have to say that some critics of this legislation say, look, we don't need to change the bankruptcy laws. We need to change the way we regulate credit card companies.
That's a legitimate point, I think. It's certainly worth exploration. One of the, I think, the most important points to be made about this bill is that we have a huge number of bankruptcies in the United States, and no one really knows why. It's a complex question. There are definitely abuses. There are some cities that seem to have extraordinary high bankruptcy rates. There's a lot we don't know about how gambling debt affects credit. And there are just a lot of questions to be asked still.
Let's talk now with Anna. Anna's calling from Rockford, Illinois.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, I feel like a second-class citizen. I'm humiliated. I'm devastated. I was raised in a family where... you're not in God's good grace if you even owe money, not to mention having filed bankruptcy. But I was put in a situation by my ex-husband it started before I realized there was going to be a divorce. And so when the divorce got going, I had absolutely no access to any of our funds. We'd made six figures and saved 35% of that for retirement. I have no way, no attorneys would help me find that money. I also was on disability, starting within the first year and a half of our marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And when we were actually going through the process of divorce, he had incorporated into his own corporation as an independent consultant, and I had no, his COBRA ran out, and I had absolutely no insurance, no access to money. My med bills were like $1,800 a month.
And how long is it going to take, Anna, before you're out from under?
I filed 13. Frankly, you know, I get credit card application, you know, stuff all the time, but I just kind of laugh at it. I mean, it's like, oh, sure, you're going to give me credit. I mean, but, you know, I do want that card, but I always viewed credit as, I think, differently than other people because I went back to school when I was in my 30s, and I had two sons to raise and became a nurse and bought a house. You know, bought a car, raised my sons, paid my student loan off.
Felt like you played by the rules, and then all of a sudden... Jeff Gellis, let me ask you, I don't mean to cut you off, Anna, but we're running out of time in the segment. You said we don't know why people, all of these 1.6 million Americans, file for bankruptcy in the few seconds we have left. Do we know, are women disproportionately filing, elderly demographics of this?
I can't cite the demographics offhand, but they're definitely... Divorce plays a large role as one of the triggers. And I think one thing to remember is the role that savings or the lack of savings play. Financial advisors will tell you that you should have 6 to 9 months of income in the bank at any given time. And most Americans don't have anywhere near that.
Mm-hmm. That's awfully true. Jeff Gellis, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Jeff Gellis, a business reporter and columnist. Oh, I'm sorry. Jeff Gellis is going to stay with us. I apologize for that. I misread my my sheet here. We'll be back with more on bankruptcy and proposed changes to the law after a short break. This is NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're discussing what filing bankruptcy may be like if Congress changes the current laws. A bill to revise the current bankruptcy laws is being debated on the floor of the United States Senate. Of course, you're being invited to join the conversation. Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Our guest is Jeff Gellis, business reporter and columnist for the Philadelphia Inquirer. And Jeff, there have been proposals to change this, as we mentioned earlier in the program, over the past almost 10 years now. Why have they not made it out of the various times they've been approved by the House or the Senate? Never the same bill in the same year.
Well, there's a lot of mixed feelings on the part of, in particular, the Democrats in Congress. Many of them agree that something ought to be done to curb abuses, and yet they worry that this is too harsh. The bill actually, if you counted, had a majority of supporters last time around in both the House and the Senate, but an amendment that was put on in the Senate blocked it. And that had to do with the whether people who do damage at abortion clinics should be allowed to discharge their fines or personal or property damage liability in bankruptcy. And that may come up again in the debate.
Well, joining us now from Capitol Hill is a supporter of the bankruptcy bill, Senator Jeff Sessions, Republican of Alabama, joins us. Nice to have you back on the program, Senator.
Good afternoon.
Why is this change to the bankruptcy laws necessary?
It's been since 1978 that we've had the this bankruptcy procedure. It's a federal court procedure. I think we in Congress are required to analyze how it's working and respond periodically to fix problems. We've seen just a host of problems develop over the years. Lawyers are now advertising regularly. They have become very sophisticated in representing their clients effectively, but really have abused the system in a way that I think goes beyond what anyone would think is fair. So we need to bring it back into balance. The bill is, I think, a very reasonable piece of legislation. It passed last time 83-15 in the Senate, and I believe we'll pass it again. But for one reason or another, it's passed three different times, and it has not become law. So I think all of us that have been working on it now, going on 8 years, are ready to see it come to an end.
As you know, critics will say, in an effort to get at this legitimate issue of abuse, this bill comes down to be unfair to low-income working people, single mothers, minority, the elderly.
I'll respond to that. First of all, the most significant change in it is that if you have certain debts and you have a high enough income that you can pay some of those debts back, you should pay them. That is not the current law. A person with a $150,000 income can bankrupt against $100,000 in debts and not pay a penny, just walk in and file bankruptcy. So this would say, and how did we set the standard? We said if you make above median income only and you don't have any special circumstances that hamper you, like a disability or unusual medical conditions, the judge can order that you pay back some portion of those debts. Probably not all, but depends on how high your income is. If you make below median income, the law will be basically the same. You will not have to pay back any. You can file under Chapter 7. So I think that is and only about 20% of the people make above median income that file in bankruptcy. A number of those will have special circumstances. So really, it's not going to be a big change for many people.
Some people disagree with you.
Well, they can. What I'm telling you is the facts, and they have been out here spinning a reality that's just unbelievable. And we're talking about health insurance. This bill doesn't deal with health insurance. This bill deals with what happens if your debts are so large that you can't pay them. What does the court do? If you make below median income, then you file Chapter 7 like you always did. If you make above median income, a court could order you to pay some portion of those debts back if the court finds your income allows you to do so. I think that's only just. High-income people, why shouldn't they pay some of their debts back if they can? I think that's a good change.
Well, let's get some callers in on the conversation, and let's go to Brian. Brian's with us from Sacramento.
Yeah, I claimed bankruptcy when I was quite young, and in 94, 95, and the penalties that I've faced, you know, in just interest, the higher interest rates since then have been in the tens of thousands extra that I would not have paid had my credit not had that bankruptcy on it. And it's almost like you're more attractive, definitely, if you've had a bankruptcy, because people know that you can't claim again for 7 years, and they're going to be able to justifiably charge you a higher interest rate. So it makes you even more attractive. And I'd just like to say to the representatives that are in support of the bill, fine, if you're going to support this bill, please also support a bill going after the credit card companies and the ridiculous penalties that they charge, you know, $40 for a late fee, $40 for a past due fee, which snowballs and destroys people's finances. If you're going to support one, support the other, and they do go hand in hand. That's all I wanted to say.
Thanks, Brian. Senator Sessions?
Well, we do have some containment, really, and restrictions on credit card companies, but that is a banking issue. That's not a bankruptcy issue per se. The banking committee is continues to look at credit card abuse. So I think I'm not saying we can't make some progress there, but we're creating a court system to ensure that, and I'm sure this individual that just called in would have found no difference if he filed bankruptcy today than he did in 96, unless his income was above median income.
Mm-hmm. Let's see if we get another caller on the line. This is Donna. Donna's with us from Cupertino, California.
Hi. I have a small business, and my business is really facing terrible economic hardship in the heart of Silicon Valley. And I was wondering how this bankruptcy, if we do file for bankruptcy, is going to affect us, affect our business.
Senator Sessions?
Of course, all these small businesses are somewhat different, and I don't think you'll see any significant change in a small business bankruptcy. And you may, if you chose to file personal bankruptcy at the same time, unless your income was high, you would not see any change either. If your income did show out to be higher than median, you could be required to pay some of the debts you personally guaranteed back. But if it was just a corporate debt, you would not be required to pay that back personally.
Senator Sessions, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Jeff Sessions, Republican of Alabama, joined us by phone from Capitol Hill. With us now from the White House, where he's attending a meeting, is Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois, the Democratic whip. Thanks very much for taking time out to be with us.
Good to be with you.
I know you have concerns about this bill. Can you summarize them for us?
Well, let me just kind of comment on Jeff's earlier point. Can you imagine why the major financial institutions and credit card industry would spend 9 years trying to pass this bill, really invest millions of dollars in lobbying if it were to make no changes? It's going to make significant changes. What it's going to mean is that a lot of people going into bankruptcy court now are going to face hurdles they've never faced before, legal costs they've never faced before, proof that has to be shown to the court that's never been required before. The net result of it is that many people filing for Chapter 7 are going to end up being told, no, you'll go to Chapter 13 where you'll continue to pay off these debts, or we just won't discharge you in bankruptcy. That's why the credit card industry and the financial industry are determined to pass this. They want debt to continue. They don't want it to be discharged in bankruptcy. And how much abuse is there in the bankruptcy courts? Well, according to the credit card industry, it's 10% of those who file. The people, the arbiters who don't have any special interests say only 3%. So we're going to change the whole system to go after 3 to 10%? I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I think the idea is to make sure that this debt is going to live on.
Well, shouldn't people who take on debt be responsible to pay it back?
Absolutely. That's the first rule. I think we learned that as a kid, and it's the right rule. But we also understand that many people, because of circumstances beyond their control, cannot pay off their debt. The activated guardsman or reservist who goes over to Iraq to fight for America, leaving a business behind that then fails, forcing him into personal bankruptcy. Shouldn't he pay off his debt? Of course he should, but understand the circumstances. The fact that half the people going into bankruptcy court have been crushed by medical bills they never anticipated. Any of us could walk into a doctor's office this afternoon and face a diagnosis that could drain our savings account. That's 99% of Americans could face that possibility. And half the people in bankruptcy court are in that position. Do they want to pay their debts? You bet they do. But when you have debt that exceeds your annual income dramatically, there's no way to get out from under it. That's why we have a bankruptcy court.
I know you introduced an amendment on the Senate floor today that would exempt members of the military from these provisions.
Yes, it basically says that we ought to ask those who are serving our country and risking their lives to go to bankruptcy court and at least receive fairer treatment. If they are defending our values, we should be on their side when they go into court, particularly if their debts have been incurred because of their military service. And so we take away some of the more harsh provisions of this bill. We also give them some helping hands in court. And we finally say that those who are abusing the process, the payday loans, the predatory lenders, they shouldn't have a day in court at the expense of our servicemen and women.
As Senator Sessions mentioned, this bill, or something very close to it, passed by a substantial margin in the U.S. Senate last year. Three Democrats on the Judiciary Committee voted for this measure to bring it out onto the Senate floor. Do you think it's going to pass this year?
I think it's likely to pass. But I'll tell you, the debate is changing on the floor. It isn't as harsh as it used to be. People were standing up moralizing when they first put this in about what kind of person could possibly be filing for bankruptcy. Now we're hearing more and more, particularly those with medical bills and those who faced a loss of job, an outsourced job, and they just can't find employment, and particularly the men and women in the military who are being activated for periods of time far longer than they ever anticipated. I think there's a little more sympathy on the floor of the Senate than there used to be. Whether it's enough to turn the tide, I can't say.
And would you expect another amendment to be offered as we mentioned earlier, on to force those who were declaring bankruptcy after being found at fault in anti-abortion demonstrations to pay off their bills?
Yes, Senator Schumer is offering that amendment. I think it's the right thing to do. People who engage in violent conduct to either harm individuals or destroy property should not be able to then escape their responsibility. They have done an irresponsible, illegal thing, and they should be held accountable for the damages that they've done. there was a rather substantial majority believing that in the past. I hope we see that again on the floor of the Senate.
Senator Durbin, I know you just stepped out of a meeting at the White House to talk to us. We appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Dick Durbin, Democrat of Illinois. I've joined us, as we mentioned, from the White House, where he's attending a meeting. We're talking about proposed changes in the bankruptcy laws, a measure is being debated on the floor of the U.S. Senate, and a similar measure is ready for introduction in the House of Representatives. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Jeff Gelis is still with us, a business reporter and columnist for the Philadelphia Inquirer. And let's get another caller on the line. This is Paul. Paul's joining us from St. Louis.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Senator Durbin mentioned a stigma against personal bankruptcy, and I don't understand how that stigma often applies to personal bankruptcy, but it doesn't appear to apply to corporate bankruptcy, where press releases go out saying we've lightened our debt load, we're restructuring ourselves to get into a better fighting position. You know, there doesn't appear to be the same problem on the corporate side.
Publicly owned companies need to put some spin on it for their shareholders, one would think, Jeff.
Well, yes, the way this bill treats personal bankruptcy compared to the business debts, and in fact the debts of wealthier people who file for bankruptcy is interesting. One of the things that you need to keep in mind about bankruptcy is that some states, Florida and Texas are the two most prominent, were historically debtors' havens, and there are still some people who you can point to who have huge mansions that they use to shield their assets to protect them in bankruptcy in those states.
Because you couldn't take their house.
You can't take their house. They have homestead exemptions. Delaware, I think, has the smallest one. You can shield about $5,000 worth of a house there. But in Florida and Texas, you can, if you meet the rules, you can shield millions of dollars worth of assets. It's supposedly why O.J. Simpson moved to Florida after the murder trial.
The civil trial.
He was worried about the civil damages that he might owe, and he was able to buy a very expensive house in Florida and keep those assets untouchable by the courts.
Paul, thanks very much.
Thanks, guys.
Let's get one more caller in. Sharon, am I pronouncing that correctly, is with us from Jacksonville?
Yes, you are.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you. I'm a bankruptcy creditor's attorney here, and have been doing this work for about 20 years. And from a creditor standpoint, and most of my clients are secured creditors, so they would be your mortgage companies, car dealerships, and so forth. The problem really lies in Chapter 13 cases, where currently there's no limit in the code to the number of times that an individual can file a Chapter 13, as long as the court doesn't find that they're abusing the system. And the reality is that most of the bankruptcy judges tend to be debtor-oriented, and so they give the debtors the benefit of the doubt. And it's not unusual for us to run into situations where we've got debtors filing 5, 6, 7, 8 times before the court says enough is enough. Plans here get confirmed routinely for up to a 60-month period. And if one goes along, gets dismissed, and then the person refiles, and this happens numerous times, you can just imagine how long the creditor is sitting there waiting to get their payments.
Mm-hmm. Does she have a point, Jeff Gelis? Do some people try to dazzle them with footwork, as it were?
There's no question. There are abuses, and there are undoubtedly lawyers who contribute to that abuse. I think the thing to keep in mind is that targeted reform of this law could address some of those abuses without doing running the risk of the damage that critics of this bill say is likely to happen to the vast majority of people who declare bankruptcy because they really have no other way out.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I agree with that, because to try to portray people who file bankruptcy as people who are trying to run away from their debts, I don't think is correct, because the majority of people who file, and I can say that from my perspective, are people who truly are in their position because of circumstances beyond their control. And they're not trying to run away from their debts. They're trying to buy some time to reorganize and pay their debts. However, there are those folks who have learned how to manipulate the system and do so very well, and I agree that the law, if targeted, could deal with those situations without penalizing those that file legitimately.
Sharon, you've gotten the last word. Thanks very much for the phone call.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. Jeff Gelis, thank you for your time today as well.
Thank you for having me.
Jeff Gelis, business reporter and columnist for the Philadelphia Inquirer, and he joined us from the studios of Audio Post in Philadelphia. When we come back from a short break, Senator Arlen Specter will join us. He's the new chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee. He'll be talking about the work ahead in terms of judicial nominations and confirmations. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.